and welcome to Facility Resilience, the Facilities Management and Business Continuity Podcast, where we discuss the latest trends in facility design, operation, and maintenance, in addition to operational resilience strategies for senior management. I'm your host, Jennifer Goetz, and today I'm joined by Steve Cremando, an emergency behavioral health specialist and threat assessment professional. He is founder and principal of Behavioral Science Applications, LLC, and a member of the steering committee for the ACES International Extremism and Political Instability Community. And together we will be discussing climate change's impact on violence. So according to NASA and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, July 2023 was the hottest month ever recorded, with millions of Americans under heat advisories. So Steve, to start out, how else has unpredictable and unprecedented weather impacted people and the planet in 2023?
Well, hey, Jennifer, thanks so much for having me. And, these are great questions. And man, they couldn't be more timely. And it's really interesting just to kind of put this in context. You know, we're thinking and talking about what's going on here in the U.S. Obviously, climate change is global. And real interesting, you know, we are in the middle right now, as you and I record this, of summer in North America. Winter, of course, in the Southern Hemisphere, places like Argentina now in the dead of winter having 100 degree days. So we're seeing really radical change everywhere across the globe in terms of the effects of climate change. And to your point, and most importantly, from a, you know, speaking from a scientific standpoint, there's a lot of good evidence on how climate change in general affects, you know, behavior. And when most people think about climate change, you're thinking about the effects on, you know, obviously on the earth, on the forests and the air and the oceans and such. And that's critically important. And these all tie together. But there's usually not as much discussion on the impact on behavior. And to your question, you know, how it affects rates of violence. So if we think about this idea that we just had a month of absolute record temperatures worldwide, and at this moment, and you and I are speaking, you know, heat waves still going on across North America. Obviously, we know that there is a very, very direct sort of effect. And we could talk about this, you know, in a semester length course about the neuropsychology of this and the effects of things like serotonin. But as people become hotter, and that's where the research is strongest in the effects of climate change. There's precipitation, there's other aspects of climate change, but the dominant topic is heat. Heat distorts human behavior, and it distorts it in a number of ways. And one of the ways is it actually increases interpersonal aggression. It can increase violence and crime. It increases social instability. It can lead to things like civil unrest and even civil war. And it tears away a community cohesion. That community cohesion could be in a neighborhood, it could be community cohesion in a workplace on different teams. So when we think about this, we are actually hardwired to become more aggressive in high heat situations. At the brain level, the parts of the brain that are involved in thermoregulation, keeping our body cool, are the exact same parts of the brain that are involved in emotional regulation. And as a trade-off, as our bodies struggle to kind of cope with extreme heat, think about Phoenix this summer, 30 plus days at 110 degrees. We're not suited for that. You know, that's not the comfort zone for humanity. You start to see these changes, and for people to just go about their daily business, you know, get to work, do their work, their bodies are struggling to cope with this. And as we have that trade-off, the body struggles to cool, it diverts energy away from the brain, especially that part of the brain involved in cooling. And in that trade-off, things suffer. Cognition suffers, job performance can suffer, our reading of risk, evaluating risks changes, our situational awareness changes, and we have a tendency to misread other people's behavior as being potentially aggressive or hostile to us. So there's a greater chance of people kind of lashing out, even defensively. So we have all these things that are changing, and sometimes people, you know, will say, well, you know, okay, the temperature is going to go up. This is whether your deep belief is climate change is natural and it's cyclical, or you are, again, you know, following the science and saying, okay, a lot of this is human caused by emissions and so forth. Regardless of why, you may be thinking like, hey, this is just going to happen and we'll increase cooling. But the problem, think about something like Phoenix this summer, is people never cool off. Even the nights stay very warm and your core body temperature stays very hot. So these behavioral effects, they continue, and they're very hard for an individual or organization to just mitigate by cooling the environment or providing more breaks. Because once the human core has really heated up in that way, you start to get these physiological changes, and then they manifest themselves as behavioral changes. And a lot of those, violence included, are really counterproductive and disruptive for the workplace, for employers, and certainly for communities.
So I know you kind of touched on how it will impact workplace productivity and about how even if you cool down spaces, people will still have these temperature shifts going on and it can still impact them. So focusing more specifically on the workplace, how can employers do their part to support employees in light of some of these events, especially heat-related events? And just in general, what should they be more prepared for in terms of workplace violence and other factors?
So I want you, I want to invite people to think about this at a few levels. And one of these is the fact that a workforce is tremendously diverse, that, the employer has to consider really the composition of the workforce, the type of work they do. If you have people in an office, there may be a greater degree of ability to control the temperature of the environment. You have people working in hybrid environments that may not have access to the same ability to cool their homes. And then if you have workers who are out in the field, whether they're going to meetings or delivering, delivery or the sort of work that demands they be out in field settings, they're going to be exposed to more heat. All that needs to be considered. And then beyond that, the question for the employer is to start to raise awareness in senior executives, mid-level of executives and managers, and then the entire workforce about the effects of heat that change behavior, including an eye towards, as you mentioned, behavior that may include more violence. But it also involves performance, because we know that attention span and concentration fade in high heat. We know that decision-making and problem-solving erode. We know that, again, people become more frustrated easily, which, again, can tie back to this issue of workplace violence. So it's really a two-pronged approach, which is one, simply starting to educate ourselves about the behavioral effects of climate change and heat, and then to start thinking about, of course, as you mentioned, well, what do we do about it? Do we give people different sorts of breaks? Do we help ensure, even if they're hybrid workers, they're working in a cool and controlled environment? How are we protecting our workers out in the field? So there's a lot of thought that needs to go into it. But the first level of this is really an understanding for everyone that heat does change behavior.
Absolutely. And thinking about this with workplace violence and how organizations will take steps to make sure to protect their employees, how can they prepare for this increased risk of violence and maybe adjust their threat management strategies appropriately? And where do you suspect security strategies may need the most updating?
So if we start in the range of workplace violence, one of the things we could do is have those who have decision-making, authority, be aware, as I said, of the effects on behavior, but then to be able to adjust it as per what's going on. I'll give you an example. There's in a number of countries, example, the UK, even in the US Marine Corps, a tradition of having a flag alert or weather alert system that says, hey, listen, for the Marines, for example, if you're at a black flag day where the wet bulb temperature is above 90 degrees, we're going to suspend all non-essential operations out in the field because we know it's just too much of a risk. So an employer can look and say, wow, the forecast calls for the next 7 days of being very, very high heat. Do we want to change anything in where people work, in the shifts or the length of hours or how we give breaks? And then this kind of translates to violence prevention, as you asked, the classic four or five types of workplace violence. Heat and climate change can have a discrete effect on each of those individually. So real quick example, type one workplace violence is the type of thing that happens, in the robbery of a convenience store. It's where people work all alone, late at night, cash on hand, and usually is typically a robbery or theft. Well, we know statistically there's a linear relationship. As temperature goes up, violent crime goes up. The likelihood of those kind of robberies go up. Does it mean that you change how many people are working that evening? Does it change your level of security at a site, knowing that this is possible if you're vulnerable to maybe that type of workplace violence? If you're vulnerable to workplace violence that is type two, customers, clients, or patients, and we know people are more frustrated, more likely to lash out, how do we change our level of situational awareness and our techniques and our procedures to help mitigate that risk? So you have to parse this as per the sort or the types rather of workplace violence an employer and their, you know, their sector may be vulnerable to. And I'll give you one last example. If we think about something like ideological violence, which is directed at an organization because of who they are or what they represent, we know we have more activity right now along the entire spectrum of extremists from far left to far right, of eco-extremists, eco-environmental extremists causing disruption to businesses, whether that's closing down places, boycotting places, damaging and sabotaging infrastructure. All of these different types of workplace violence can change. You know, when most of us think of workplace violence, you're thinking about the thing we hear most often on the news, the former disgruntled employee who comes back to work to cause violence. Well, that's one of the five types of workplace violence. And yes, that's affected by temperature and heat as well. But the employer needs to think in a more nuanced way, well, what types of workplace violence are we exposed to? How are they affected by heat, which would guide your mitigation strategy? So it's hard to say in a one size fits all, oh, here's the things we do in a warming planet to mitigate these risks of workplace violence being exacerbated by the sort of heat-driven aggression. It's going to be very specific. And so the starting place is analysis, is a climate-informed analysis of the employer thinking through or being guided through a process. What are our workplace violence exposures? How are they compounded or exacerbated by climate? And this, as I said, will give some roadmap to the, you know, the solutions to address those problems.
Absolutely. We have the tools and the technology to measure the magnitude and the frequency of these events that are happening. So I'm sure that can really factor in. And if organizations pay close attention to them, they can come up with a sound strategy. One thing that I also wanted to touch on is, where do you see the state of our world, say, in the next like 5 years?
Okay, that's a big question. I'll give you what I think is an informed answer from my perspective.
Of course,
so
yes.
Each year, the World Economic Forum, as you know, gathers in Davos, Switzerland, kind of January, February. In the advance of that meeting is published every year the Global Risk Report. And this year for 2003, you have a group of 1,200 experts across a wide range of disciplines who contribute to this report. And what they're looking at is the 2-year and the 10-year profile going forward. And this is, you know, an easy report for anyone to find online who's interested. Just get out there and find a 2023 risk report, global risk report. In the 2-year, they are looking at 5 out of 10 of the most serious risks being climate related. And in the 10-year, it's, I think, either 6 or 8 of them, but nearly all of the risks are associated in one way or another with climate. One of the things that kind of is an overarching theme for those findings is the expectation that we are entering into an era of polycrisis. And what we mean by polycrisis is simultaneous overlapping disasters that are happening nearly constantly. Look at this snapshot where we are in time. And, you know, of course, our listeners are listening at all different times in the future, but we're just coming off of the wildfires in Maui, the wicked flooding of a rare hurricane, tropical storm hitting Southern California and the Southwest, wildfires, record magnitude in Canada and parts of the US, all of these things going on simultaneously. So I'll go back to something you mentioned earlier, you know, kind of the sources of our information. Last October, NOAA published a report that said in the 1980s, we averaged a catastrophic event, and they were clarifying that or categorizing that as an event that has $1 billion of damage or more. And of course, these numbers adjusted for inflation, we were averaging one event like that once every 82 days. We are now averaging one every 18 days. So the likelihood of communities, of organizations having to deal with not one, but this almost constant stream of back-to-back or more likely overlapping crises will be the new challenge. And climate drives a lot of that. You know, a lot of the idea with wildfire it may not be causal. I mean, things just don't spontaneously combust, but it creates the dryness. We have the drought that creates the dryness, which is fertile ground for a fire. We have more intense storms and lightning strikes, which can trigger these fires. And as I said, right now in Canada, 1,050 fires burning, with about a third of them roughly out of control. So we have these effects going on that are climate related, and this idea of climate fueled disasters. We are today watching the progress of Hurricane Franklin move across the Atlantic Basin. It is likely to come towards the Gulf and past the Florida Keys. And in the southern Florida Keys right now, the water temperature is nearing 102 degrees. It is warmer than it has ever been in recorded history. We know that as tropical storms and hurricanes pass over warmer water, they pick up more moisture, they pick up more energy, and these storms become frequent, more intense, and longer in duration. So as you think about the future, a lot of this gets much more challenging because of the contributions of climate. And that's what it does, is contributes to these risks, but doesn't necessarily spontaneously cause the risk. And therefore, all the things that are on our risk menu, and we need to reexamine and we need to recalibrate and say which of these risks are likely to be affected by climate. And my estimation is probably most of them in one way or another. And one of the things that unifies it, specific to our conversation today, is human behavior, because that crosscuts across nearly all of our different risks and all of our different functions in the workplace. So this deepening of an understanding of what the effects of climate change are likely to be on human behavior, well, it's critical to every aspect of business and becomes a real critical theme in understanding disruption and in the general, you know, general theme of continuity and security.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Steve, thank you so much for spending the time to speak with me about this subject.
Well, I appreciate it. Great to have an opportunity to share some of this with you. Mm-hmm. And we'd invite people to, you know, stay tuned, because as we learn more, really, we're very much in uncharted territory. But as we continue to learn more about climate change and its effect on human behavior, there's going to be many lessons that we need to be applying to our daily work.
Of course. Special thank you to our audience for listening today. Stay tuned for the next episode of Facility Resilience.